Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW. Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Jake, we got a few headlines coming out of the show. The main event ends in a no contest when Tiffany Stratton interrupts the Bayley-Naomi title match, and we had a couple suites full of women watching who were yelling at each other at the end. Also, AJ Styles, not unexpectedly, but confirmed he is moving on with a win over LA Knight to face face Cody Rhodes at Backlash for the undisputed WWE title. But I'm most intrigued to talk about what's going on with the Bloodline with you. We have Paul Heyman in a new role. We have fans in a new role, which is chanting, "We want Roman." Very different than, you know, five, 10 years ago when we said Roman's going to need a run as a heel before he'll be over as a babyface. And look where we are here. And then Tama Tonga in the mix. Solo getting a much more pronounced range of acting asked of him. And Heyman, as I said, in a different role. What, are you feeling invigorated, or do you think this is a weak sequel? Where are you so far on this post-WrestleMania 40 chapter of the Bloodline, Jake?
I think they've played their cards well. Paul Heyman has, as you'd expect, slid pretty effortlessly into his new role as just being a guy who used to adore Roman Reigns and have a lot of deference to him, to just being sort of terrified of Solo and his new power play. And I think Solo, he got kind of the glow up from last week to this week. He was wearing kind of his same outfit last week, but now he's in a suit and he's trying to present himself more professionally. Did I miss them clarifying what they meant about whatever acronym they gave Tama Tonga? Was it MFT? I might be missing something there, but I don't know exactly what that means.
I think it's meant to be a mystery. I'm typing my report and not on social media during these shows, so I don't know if it's obvious or I missed something, but it was either MFT or NFT. I think it was MFT. And the first thing that comes up with me is Minneapolis Federation of Teachers, which I doubt is what it stands for.
I think the addition...
Marriage and Family Therapist also comes up. go ahead.
Yeah, they've done a nice job with him. The introduction has been good so far. It seems like they're kind of playing into this idea that, when Solo said losing had consequences, he meant, that included everybody, even Roman. And so he's taking control. He's adding new members. They've taken on this sort of vicious new personality that matches Solo's demeanor. And they're going about their business a lot differently than they did with Roman Reigns as the power broker. And so I think it's gone pretty well. The Bloodline had kind of fallen into a very comfortable routine, which I guess, has its good and bad elements. And I think this has been a nice change of pace. They feel like they're a lot more dangerous than they were, just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm loving this, I got to admit. I love a terrified Paul Heyman. He's like my dog during a thunderstorm, watching me constantly, but also hiding and trying to find somewhere safe to be when he's used to being in control. I think Solo has really stepped up. I mean, he had that, Batista early in his career in Evolution vibe where you kind of, even when everyone else was talking and moving and gyrating, and he just wanted to look at him and see how he was acting with his arms crossed. And he was doing so little, but the little bit he did said, okay, there's some subtlety here that might work when he's asked to do more. Or there's a sign of sophistication to a subtlety that indicates when he's not so subtle and doing more, he'll be good. And I've been impressed so far. Tama Tonga, I haven't seen enough to know either way, what his range is going to be. Cause so far, all he's had to do is just, show up and tonight beat someone up. A lot of wrestlers can do that, but there's a presence to him. He's got a heart, you know, he's got a lot to live up to, but so far I'm like not worried, but I'm also not convinced he'll have the gravitas in this role that Roman and The Rock have, and he doesn't have the history of the fans that the Usos did, and certainly they develop personalities distinct from each other, playing off each other, and then there's Heyman. So again, that's a lot to ask of someone, and I'm not pessimistic about it, but he's got more to show me before I'll be convinced that this will work. You know, remember the imitation Superfly when Snuka left and Vince McMahon was like, we're going to make somebody else the new Superfly, and I don't know. So he's got a tough act to follow, but so far, what do you think of his role and his presence? Because I think I'm coming across more skeptical that it'll work than I mean to. I just say it's early yet, and there's a lot to live up to.
I mean, I think with what he's been asked to do thus far, I don't really have any faults, that I can point at. You know, he looks the part. So far, he's acted the part. He has a physically intimidating presence. He's, you know, shown off some violence. I think, you know, it's been fine. You know, I don't know when we're going to hear from him or, you know, any of that. And so it's difficult to say how well-rounded of a character or an act he's going to be. But if Solo is going to be, you know, the new out front figure for the Bloodline and Tama Tonga takes on that enforcer role that Solo used to have, then maybe he won't be tasked with saying too much. And I think as far as the visual presentation goes, I think it's been fine thus far.
Yeah. I think they're setting up Roman really well here for, you know, building there. Things are happening without him. We didn't have Heyman pull out the phone today because it got knocked out and smashed. And so we didn't have him even trying to call Roman Reigns, but he tried to say to Solo, and I love that scene, someday this will be your role, but you're making decisions that aren't yours to make yet. And, you know, it takes a lot for Heyman to get the gumption up to say that. And he's saying it nervously and feels like he comes across as if he's aware he might be in peril by saying anything to Solo. And this has been, the groundwork has been laid for this for a year, you know, the way that Solo just didn't tolerate others. And he just felt like he was just waiting for his time and that he was sort of deciding when he was going to choose it was his time. And he didn't like the foolishness and bickering and all that. And this idea that Roman is not around and Solo's making decisions, but now when Roman returns, it's the opposite of what it had been, which was, oh, when dad shows up, he's going to scold the kids and it's going to be fun to see, you know, how distressed he is over how things fall apart when he's not around. This is different. This isn't Sami Zayn and the Usos get, you know, embarrassing the Bloodline or not living up to his standards. This is someone else trying to take control and not treating Paul Heyman well. You know, a lot of us were wondering why Paul Heyman in the Hall of Fame this year. And, you know, the obvious answer was, oh, it's in Philly. But it clearly seems like it was more than that. You know, Heyman has said this is Paul Levesque's first year totally in control of the Hall of Fame. As became really clear to everyone at the Hall of Fame, Heyman is on Team Levesque, and he and Stephanie have made up. Because Heyman was not hiding in his Hall of Fame speech, how he is, I'm trying to think of the right adjective, not gleeful, but not sad that the Vince McMahon era is over, and making it clear he's not hedging, and this is the Levesque era, and we're glad that other guy's gone. That's what came across in that speech and all that. But what came across, so part of it was put him in the Hall of Fame this year because it'll be an honor to be Levesque's first headliner for the WrestleMania weekend that Levesque is the first one he's in control of. But now it seemed at the time, and again, we kind of saw this type of thing might be coming, but it also just made sense. Roman's going to be a little out of character, respectful of Heyman. Heyman's going to come out and break character a little bit, talk about his kids. But now it's coming across, and maybe it's a happy accident, happy coincidence, that they wanted to establish the human connection between these two and how tight their bond is and how, you know, they're both dads and Reigns says, was the one who proposed to Heyman, you know, if you manage me, I'd go to great heights. And now they're saying, and he closes by saying, if you don't see the wise man next to me, then I'm not going to be around. Like basically we're paired up for the rest of my career. That really established what felt like an unbreakable bond. It doesn't have to match storyline because that was outside of canon. But I think it's enhancing canon for those who saw that, that these two are inseparable, and Roman is not going to like how Solo is bullying and disrespecting and disregarding Heyman. And I think with a crowd chant tonight, people love saying Paul Heyman now when he introduces himself. They chanted, "We want Roman." I just think it's going to be a big moment when Roman shows up. And, you know, it's crazy because Cody is so red hot right now, and they continue to tout, you know, it's charity work and giving back and, you know, autograph sessions and on the new PW Torch daily cast. They were talking about how Charlie and Kevin were talking about how at WrestleMania weekend that Cody was the one who stayed around to sign autographs. And, you know, he's just super professional and friendly, where some of the other people were maybe looking at the clock and leaving right as soon as their time was up. We have that all the time. And by the way, everybody, check that out. Acknowledging WWE, it dropped today. It's brand new on the PW Torch daily cast feed, or dropped last night. It's the new WWE-themed show, Hard Act to Follow, speaking of which, with Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure coming to a glorious conclusion WrestleMania 40 weekend. And now Kevin and Charlie picking up the WWE-themed show each week. And they did a great job of the first show. I listened to it on my dog walk earlier today. And already it's going to be a destination show for me. But plug aside and Cody thing aside, back to my Cody point, he's got a tough situation now, Jake, because Roman Reigns is going to potentially compete with Cody, if not surpass Cody, as soon as he comes back as the most over-top babyface, certainly cool and over in a different way. And I'm interested in kind of the meta sense of how does WWE handle that? If they end up in separate brands, that's cool. You know, they've got top babyface on each brand. But on PLEs, when Roman is wrestling, does Cody take the CM Punk role where he never really headlines a pay-per-view unless he's against the top guy, because Roman is still the top guy. Anyway, I said a lot there, Jake, any thoughts on all that?
Yeah, they definitely put Cody in a difficult position. You know, it's clear that Roman is going to come back as a babyface. I guess the timing of it becomes more interesting. You know, he does seem to be off filming something at the moment, and I guess I don't know the extent of the projects that he may or may not have lined up, you know, heading into the summer and what that may mean for his WWE schedule. But I think a longer break would actually be the right move, just to give Solo and this new bloodline a bit of time to breathe. I think it's a positive sign for him that he's already getting those chants. And it'll be, you know, a fun couple of months. I don't know where the new bloodline is going to be drafted to. You know, Nick Aldis seemed to hint that there may be consequences in order for their, you know, the level of violence and savagery, I think he called it, that they were inflicting on the rest of the roster. And so, will they attempt to split up different factions and teams in this draft, or are they going to be drafted as units like they once were, in previous times? I guess we don't really know what to expect from this new era. They do have new people in the company now, running creative and having input. You know, Lee Fitting has seen a draft or two in his lifetime, and he could probably, offer some hints as to things that might be a bit more exciting to do and new ways to shoot things and everything else. But I think the long-term plan has to be that trilogy with Cody Rhodes, and maybe there are different alignments the next time they get there. You know, I think that's a real possibility. I know Cody has been very resistant in the past towards turning heel, but he may not have a choice if people just kind of grow tired of his act. You know, like that. I think that's always sort of the curse of being a successful babyface, is that once, you know, you're the dog that catches the car, it's a bit difficult to know what to do next and how to execute it so that people just don't grow tired of the act, because you can't really be the underdog fighting the system anymore. And I think Cody has done a pretty good job of navigating that thus far. But we'll see what that looks like after SummerSlam and everything else that could happen in between then and now. So they have Roman in their back pocket. They have a feud with The Rock with Cody in their back pocket. I am curious to see what the Bloodline feud looks like. It seems like they could be setting up, the OG Bloodline of Roman, Jay, and Jimmy against whatever this new group ends up looking like once it's fully formed. And yeah, I think that could be a big feud for them, SummerSlam or whenever they get around to it, Survivor Series, or however they go about setting it up. And so there's a lot of potential here, and it's just a matter of how long it takes to develop and how well they're able to execute it. But I think the pieces are in place at this point for, some potentially exciting stuff.
Absolutely. I can see it going so many different directions with so many different matchups at so many different times. You can have, two different versions of Bloodline in a 3-on-3 match. You can have 2-on-2 with or without the tag titles, with the other two splitting off for singles. You've got Cody versus Rock. You've got Roman versus Rock. You've got Cody versus Solo. You have Roman versus Solo, maybe headlining WrestleMania when Rock and, co-headlining with Rock and Cody, or maybe that match takes place sooner and they end up at Roman Rock at WrestleMania next year. The pace of things can change, and obviously injuries can change things. News of Seth Rollins having knee surgery and missing some time. Drew McIntyre's contract still not renewed, expiring next month. Some question marks as far as two of the other top players in the mix right now. And then, are they relying on CM Punk or not when it comes to his durability? There's some question marks out there, and all those can change. If Drew signs or doesn't, if Seth comes back quickly or gets injured again, and if Punk, they gain confidence in Punk, it can, I assume they've got a few multiple paths in mind for where they want to go with the top men's faces and heels in upcoming PLEs. So from a post-WrestleMania standpoint, it's not a letdown. There's a lot going on. But the key is Cody being as good, not just after the chase is over, but also after being in the presence of and playing off of a polished top act with really smart people who knew their roles really well in Roman and Heyman and that whole Bloodline storyline. That really helped him. And not that he wasn't good in other things he has done with Seth and all that, but it's not just that he won the belt and the chase is over, but he's got to show up at these tapings, work with the writers, and come up with promos that don't revert to some of the stuff in AEW that led to the fans turning on him. And I'm not saying the circumstances are similar enough where that's even likely, but it's got to be in the back. I would hope it's in the back of WWE's mind and his mind. Okay, I showed up and Heyman and Roman had all these ideas and they said, you stand here, you say this, oh, don't say that. And everything was just worked really well. I don't think he's going to have that same support group around him. So now how does the writer and Cody and the team and Levesque, how do they put him in a position to win and not seem like, uh-oh, that star player was good because of the, got the NBA in the background. That star power forward was great because he had a great point guard. But now that point guard's not there, and now he's not the same player. So that's something to watch too. I'm not pessimistic about it. I throw it out there because I think Cody's going to succeed, and I think so far so good, but it's going to be all the more impressive because it will be without that great support group that he's had up until now otherwise. Let's pause. Let's introduce the show, give out the phone number, and move on to the caller portion of the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, April 19th, 2024. We're here covering WWE SmackDown just a few minutes after it ended on Fox Broadcast Network. We're streaming live here at WadeKellerPostShow.com. If you're live streaming us, thanks for joining us. If you want to participate in the show, you are invited to do so. The number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We would love to hear from you. And if you're a regular, we'd love to hear from you. If you're a first-time caller, that would be great. Also, we've got James and Clemson, Sean and Murfreesboro, and a couple other callers also on hold. So you can get in line by calling that number and pushing 1 on your keypad to indicate you want to be on the show. You can also call that number and just listen in and decide as the show goes on if you want to be on, and then push 1 at that point. The other way you can be part of the show is by email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. And you're welcome to send in your email either during the TV show or during the post show that we're hosting now. We'll keep an eye on the inbox. That also applies to Wednesday Night Dynamite and Monday Night Raw, and eventually probably some collisions again as the schedule just kind of works itself out, both on the AEW and wrestling side, not going head-to-head with pay-per-views and with my schedule, and also if it just seems like they're prioritizing the show. But that's another discussion for a different show. Tonight we're talking SmackDown, and the other voice you've heard so far is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. Jake, welcome back to the co-host chair. Good to have you.
Thanks, Wade. Always happy to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. So let's just shift into caller mode here and bring some other people into the conversation, and we will start with James in Clemson. James, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Jake. Anybody who knows me knows that I've primarily been a caller to the AEW show, your post show, for a while now. But I recently, I don't have, like, you know, 12 hours a week to watch all the wrestling, and I pretty much find time to watch, you know, one or two shows a week. But I'm kind of swapped from watching AEW primarily to watching WWE primarily, and I was just hoping to talk about that a little bit as to why, if that's okay with you, Wade.
Sure thing, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, so what I had some things happen in my life a while back with my work and everything and my business. And so I kind of stopped watching wrestling for a few weeks a couple months ago. You know, I missed the Sting pay-per-view and everything. And I came back to AEW. And also, I'm ashamed to admit that I had to cut off my VIP subscription for a few, but I stayed with the podcast, I promise. And I have it back on now, so we're good.
I'm sorry, Jake, yeah, can you hear James? I can't hear James anymore. No, I'm joking. Go ahead, James.
Okay. So just had to get that disclaimer out of the way, Wade.
That's okay.
But yeah, I came back to AEW around at Big Business to watch the Sasha thing, and ultimately I kind of felt like you did. I felt like it was going in the right direction. So afterwards I was kind of watching a little bit, and I tuned into WrestleMania weekend. And I mean, I came away just blown away with everything WWE did for the most part, Hall of Fame, the whole weekend, but mostly by the Cody story. And then, like everybody else, I watched AEW that week and saw that Punk footage and the Ospreay thing. And it just kind of really soured me. I have a little bit more reasons why. But afterwards, I watched a SmackDown after that Dynamite. And, like, even listening to your post show, it was just all positivity about this. And, you know, everybody with just positive things to say, whereas, like, with the AEW shows, it feels like it's just the same old criticisms over and over and over again. And so I've just kind of decided I wanted to go with the product that makes me feel like it's everything that AEW really promised to be in the beginning, ultimately, which it is weird, but it's what WWE feels like it is now. Issue with AEW is that, to me, I feel like Tony Khan reminds me of Vince McMahon when I stopped watching WWE when AEW first started. And what I mean by that is that the whole show feels like it's all about what he wants. Like, it doesn't feel like he really cares what the fans want. He says he looks at the numbers and everything, but he's putting out something that ultimately he wants, whereas WWE feels like they're putting out something that people want to see, which is a big difference. And you know, everything that happened that week, it just kind of felt like it proved Punk right to me that AEW's not really a business. It's kind of a job for a bunch of indie wrestlers, in my opinion. And my other issue with AEW is the price of fandom. You know, the $50 a month for pay-per-views, or the $50 per pay-per-view is just getting ridiculous for me, you know? And so, And then those are things that WWE is doing right. You know, my favorite era of WWE, like other than like the Cena years, which is when I became a fan, was when Paul Levesque was doing TakeOver. Those shows were just incredible. And honestly, those shows were what I expected AEW to be when it first started. And another like really big event that like kind of made me feel like a wrestling fan again was when with Cody versus Dustin at Double or Nothing in AEW. Fantastic match, and it just kind of rejuvenated my fanhood. And now I look at WWE and I see Triple H in charge and I see Cody on top, and it's like watching the Dream Team. They're just doing so many things right. They're delivering on AEW and Cody's promise that they made in 2019. My favorite thing that they really do well is they make babyface as well. You know, there's no shades of gray in WWE. The only shades of gray are with the GMs, Nick Aldis, and which is the way it should be. And also they do some things like that we've kind of talked about AEW for a long time, like making the title feel important to everybody. AEW kind of overdid it some with the whole MJF fighting the world thing. But, you know, on this show tonight, you had the women looking in on the title match just from the crowd, and it felt like all the women want to be champion, you know? And that's all we were ever asking for, nothing too crazy. I think WWE is doing a lot of things right. My only criticism of them really is they're – like at WrestleMania, for example, they were really missing that good work rate match that someone like Ospreay or Okada could have provided them. So I wish they would sign some guys like that, you know. That's pretty much all my reasons. It kind of feels good to get off the chest. So.
No, you put it really well. And even though you talked for a while, I think it was a succinct way to make a lot of, I think, pertinent points, and I think a lot of people listening were probably nodding along. You know, we had a question, I think, on the Fixed Mailbag a couple weeks back, 2-3 weeks back, which was, is part of the drop in AEW, maybe it was a caller on one of our shows. It does, unfortunately, blend in sometimes. I have to think a little harder to pinpoint it. But is the drop in AEW and the growth of WWE some of the same fans? Or did AEW bring some fans back from being, you know, they were lapsed fans, and now they're sort of lapsed again? Or... In that case, WWE's just expanded their fan base with a bunch of younger fans and more mainstream fans and all that. Or is it a lot of people that AEW brought back into the fold, but they're like you? I mean, you just told the story. AEW brought me back, but WWE is now doing checking enough boxes for what I look for in wrestling, and AEW has let me down enough, even if I do like a Will Ospreay, Claudio type match. And it's pricey, and WWE just feels like they got momentum and all this. And like you said, babyface characters that you can believe in that aren't too clever for their own good with a bunch of shades of gray. I think a lot of people look for that, and it's a winning formula. We've been talking, you know, in the lead up and after WrestleMania, Jake, what is it that has made WWE so successful with these sellout crowds? I mean, it's not like ratings are, you know, crazy higher like you would expect if you're going to define something as a boom period, but they're steady, if not up a little bit at a time when AEWs are down. So, you know, year over year, especially if you go back a couple years with AEW. So, Jake, we talked about absence of irritants. You know, I coined that phrase when Triple H first took over, and people were like, what's better about the show? And I said, it's not what's better. It's about what's not around that is worse. You just subtracted some stuff that really took away from the good things they were doing. But other things are at play. So, Jake, you heard what James said, comment on that and kind of the larger issue of, do you think WWE's pulling AEW fans away? And if so, how, or are they just bringing in new fans?
Yeah, I guess, you know, if you're WWE, you have to be hoping that your growth isn't just, you know, I guess, cannibalizing somebody else's market share, right? Like you want to be able to say that you're growing the wrestling business in its entirety and then not just stealing viewers from a, you know, from essentially a much smaller company. But I think the lack of ratings increases for WWE, at least, you know, in a large sense, is it just a matter of not winning over the right people? You know, there's what, like 40,000 Nielsen households and 100,000 total polled users of those products, you know, along with whatever data they're able to get from streaming and cable providers. And so it may just be that there's some lag there, you know, or there, you know, Nielsen is not capturing the demographic that's watching wrestling the most as well as it could. But I mean, WWE is still sort of bucking the trend of people, you know, of other cable networks and shows that are losing viewers on an annual basis.
I'll insert real quick, just that when you see ratings up for WWE and ratings down for AEW, and it matches ticket sales up for WWE and ticket sales down for AEW, to me it just makes me believe in Nielsen with their substantial sample size, which is way bigger than most sample sizes for most things, although they're covering a lot of shows, you know, and trying to make the best of changing technologies and all that. If we ignore ratings, we just look at ticket sales and we look at anecdotal. And again, anecdotal to me just gives a boost to hard numbers. But anecdotally, it's clear people are more excited about and positive about what WWE does than AEW. And that's been going on for a while and seems increasingly the case. And that's not to say I don't enjoy AEW. I think there's people who are frustrated by AEW in certain ways and still love it, and it's still going to be their primary place they spend money. But even those people are like, oh, I wish they went to do this, and I wish they did a little more of that. But boy, do they have a lot of stuff I love that still keeps me a fan.
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't envy Nielsen at all. They have a tough job attempting to get accurate data. You know, like I think the demographics that television companies and advertisers are most interested in gathering information about are the least likely people to want to put a Nielsen box in their house, you know? And so how do you incentivize those people to join? I don't know. But I think the larger point, you know, that we're trying to cover here is that I think AEW from its inception in 2018, 2019 to now, there's been a pretty large see change in how people perceive both companies, largely because of Vince McMahon's two forced retirements and the creative changes that took place as a result of that. But now, you know, because of Paul Levesque taking control and WWE changing their creative approach, you know, AEW doesn't have the built-in advantage of, you know, Vince McMahon's tyrannical vision of wrestling, sort of, you know, suffocating fans with a pillow over most of the 2010s and early 2020s. And so their job got much harder just over the past couple of years. And I think we're starting to see that in the product. I don't think people who jumped on AEW at the beginning were just looking for an alternative to what WWE was doing at the time. And now it doesn't seem like AEW is offering as much of an alternative as they are just offering a product that doesn't tell stories in the same way, that doesn't produce television in the same way, and is very focused on mechanical wrestling matches. And I'm not sure philosophically if that's the right approach to appeal to the widest wrestling fan base. You know, you can see that if you go to both of these shows. I've been to a number of WWE shows and a number of AEW shows over the last 5 years. And the difference in who shows up for these events is pretty stark, you know, and you can observe that in person yourself if you go. There's far more families at WWE shows. There's far more women at WWE shows in general. There's far more people from other demographics other than white men at WWE shows. And so you have to think about, you know, how you're appealing to people outside your current audience if you're Tony Khan. And I think he's gotten so laser focused on this approach that he's stuck on, you know, that he's sort of missing the wider ocean of fans that he could be appealing to.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, too, with Nielsen families, just going back to that for a second, the younger demographic that, you know, you're talking about, maybe they're hard to get, they might be the most likely to say yes to being a Nielsen home because Nielsen pays them. You know, it's not a lot, but they pay them. And they just, you know, you wear a meter and they literally listen to what you're watching, so they know what you're watching. So you don't have to fill out anything anymore, and you get paid extra if they sense your meter is on all the time. And so I just think demographically they check the boxes they need to, and they're covering everything. And I just think their technology is changing. You're not filling out by hand with a pen or pencil, a book or anything like that. And they like come to your home and make sure you're attached up to your TVs. I think they're technology has kept up, and I think they get – I'm not an expert on it, but from the stuff that I read periodically about them, I think they're really working hard to earn the confidence of networks and advertisers because they need to survive. And, you know, I think they're getting some pretty good doing a pretty good job adjusting to the streaming world, especially with the meters that someone has to wear. And they literally just know what you're listening to, and that turns into kind of like voice recognition into knowing what you're watching. So there's not even any guesswork anymore.
The ads in particular, you know, they actually have like a certain sound pitch that's inaudible to human ears that gets picked up by those sensors. But I think the most interesting thing for me will be to see how transparent Netflix is with their numbers when WWE moves there, and what kind of difference you'll see in how it compares to what Nielsen had been previously reporting. I'm fascinated by that transition.
And I'm wondering if Nielsen, for the sake of staying relevant, won't, because they're going to know if people are watching Raw on Netflix. So are they going to start reporting that? If Nielsen won't release the numbers, there's no law that says Nielsen can't tell advertisers how many people really are watching. Because advertisers, they're going to have ads on Netflix for Raw. You know, Hulu and Amazon, I mean, Amazon Prime's like, you know, we're going to run ads now. You know, and there's all, you know, Peacock, you've got to pay extra to avoid ads. So this whole streaming to avoid ads thing has turned into pay extra to avoid ads. So advertisers are going to want to know how many people are watching. So there's going to be some system that's going to capture this. I don't want to get too in the weeds on all that because we still got James here and we got a lot from SmackDown to talk about, but I'm interested in this stuff, Jake. That's why I can get carried away. I think Nielsen to survive will find a way to keep up. And I'm hopeful but not confident that out of the gate we'll get some good numbers on Netflix one way or the other, not just a press release from Netflix or WWE when times are good, because advertisers are going to demand to know reliable numbers, and those numbers I think will get out. James, look what you started. Back to you. anything you want to add or respond to?
Who is Nielsen? No, I'm just kidding.
star in Europe.
he's AEW's next big signing. So. I talked a lot about that, and I apologize for like not having a lot of SmackDown talk, as I'm trying to kind of get into everything, you know. And when I call back, I'll talk about SmackDown, I promise. But just one thing I want to say, and then I'll go. And that's that. I wish more than anything that the Young Bucks would go to WWE. I've talked a lot about the Young Bucks in the past, so I just got to bring them up one final time. If they went to WWE, like, I feel like they would just learn how to be such big stars and so much less indie than they are. They're doing okay with this new gimmick, but like we say, WWE knows how to build baby faces, and for a long time, the Bucks were the biggest babyface there was, and I just wish they would go there. I just imagine in my mind a huge tag match at WrestleMania on top of this already great card between the Usos and the Young Bucks, and there's your work rate match right there. So I just feel like those guys need more direction to reach their full potential. I promise I will never, ever cancel my VIP again, it's really good talking to you guys.
That James, that is legally binding. I sent it to my attorneys right now, so we'll hold you accountable and auto-withdraw your money till your death.
Tell Todd I said hi while you're doing that.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, James. Jake, what do you think about the babyface side of what James brought up, which is no shades of gray. You just they have something that they stand for that fans buy into. They're cool. They're passionate about what they do. They have dreams that fans relate to, and we're not trying to overcomplicate things by adding some dark side so that fans have to second guess whether this is someone that they like. They're basically giving you a home team that you can believe in, like, you know, using a sports analogy, and going all in with it, as opposed to what I've always felt was a misunderstanding of what a babyface was. I'm like, well, so Steve Austin wasn't Bob Backlund. I'm like, yeah, but he was clearly a babyface. They weren't giving you reasons not to like him. He was beating up the bots. He just had an edge to him. And is WWE good at that in some ways that James is onto, in ways that AEW has been inconsistent with? Is that whether it's, is that a fair criticism or valid in terms of a strategy that AEW might want to look at? And it's so tough because, you know, they've had so many injuries, and Hangman was the top babyface, but he was mopey. MJF was who knows what the last year and a half, 2 years. You know, Will Ospreay, I think people are excited about because he's like, you know, obviously he's not pro Don Callis, and it's just a matter of time before it's, you know, that breakup is clear. And then they got somebody on the top who they can unabashedly cheer for. And I think that's kind of what they were looking for with Swerve, is someone that would face heels and not be some sort of tweener who never embraces the fans cheering him.
Yeah, I think WWE probably has an edge on AEW in terms of and how they frame baby faces. I don't think they're perfect, though. You know, like I still think we end up in a lot of situations where, you know, the heel is sort of interpreted as the cool, collected character and the smart character that the audience can, you know, can relate to in some ways. And the babyface is just kind of left to act like this hapless idiot until it comes time to finally get their revenge. And I think there could be more complexity to WWE's babyfaces in general. I think Cody has sort of bucked the trend in that regard. He's rarely been put out there just to be completely embarrassed by a heel. You know, he typically at least has a sense of his wits about him. And so, you know, and I'm very curious to how Roman will end up being presented when, you know, when it's time for him to be a babyface. You know, if he's going to end up falling victim to some of those same things where, you know, you turn babyface and then you suddenly lose like 45 IQ points or something. And you can't,
right.
You can't deduce things anymore, and you don't see these surprise attacks that you were just planning yourself 3 months ago coming from behind and all that stuff. So I'm hoping that they avoid a lot of those tropes with you know, continue to avoid them with Cody and avoid them with Roman and apply those lessons elsewhere on the show. But I think AEW in comparison, you know, they do have Ospreay, they do have Swerve. I think both of them have an opportunity to be very successful baby faces. But they, you know, oftentimes they don't get enough of a chance to really go out there and talk and explain themselves to the audience and win them over and make them understand their reasoning and justification for doing things, why certain matches and titles are important to them, you know, what it means to their career, that kind of thing. I think Ospreay has had a couple of, you know, on-screen promos where he's attempted to go through that stuff, but he's only had, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 minutes to cut a promo. And I think you know, Tony Khan is very hesitant to relinquish enough time for babyfaces to go out there and really win over the audience. And I think that's part of the problem, is that there's, you know, there's 3, 4, 5, 10 to 15 minute matches on your average episode of Dynamite. And that leaves precious little time to really spend on getting your characters over with the audience. And so you end up with, you know, a roster that's just chock full of people who can go out there and tear down the house when it comes to working in the ring. But they, so few of them have, you know, really strong connections to the crowd that it ends up not mattering, you know? And, yeah. And I think you got to find the balance there between, because if you go out there and have 15-minute bangers, you know, it pleases the audience to an extent that in the moment, ephemerally, they enjoy it. But there's so many great matches week to week, every week in both companies, that I don't think that's the stuff that sticks with people anymore. I really think you got to connect with the crowd before you can really make those matches matter to people.
And I think Tony Khan grew up in an era, and he's a product of his upbringing as a wrestling fan, where great matches were scarce. It was like an archaeological dig, finding tapes from Japan or a great match from Europe, or, hey, here's a VHS tape from AAA or the indie scene or PWG. And his mentality is still the same, that like he thinks there's this whole fan base of people who are just so glad that they can have great matches presented to them, as opposed to there's more than they can keep up with because of streaming and YouTube and cable and all the available options, New Japan streaming service. There's so many good matches. That's not what wrestling fans need. It's like, you know, if it's late at night, you're smoking pot and you got no snacks, you want a bag of chips. But if you're surrounded by cupboards full of bags of chips, you're happy, you're satiated, you got more than you can need. And it's legal everywhere now, so I feel like I can just say that stuff now. And you have Tony now with a bunch of fans going, we have all the snacks we want. We're surrounded by them. That's not what we're craving anymore. We're satiated. They're like, we want some, but we don't need more. We already have enough. What we want is stories and journeys and characters that we can believe in. And like, you know, I love watching NHL games and NBA games, but if they just randomly drew players to team with each other, to be in teams and had generic jerseys, you know, red and white, you know, some were in red and white and others were black and gray, and it just changed all the time. And then every game was like a game for some sort of championship, but nobody was really the only champion. And almost every game you won a title or a trophy, but then you watch the next night and they're a completely different set of players in generic uniforms, not linked to any city with no identity, who are also playing for some other championship that may or may not be a bigger deal than the one you just watched the two teams play for last night. I'm sorry, there's only so many dunks and great passes and you know, dribbling through players and great defensive plays and blocks that are going to entertain me if they're all playing for meaningless championships, because they're always for championships, and I'm not attached to the journeys that they're on and their personalities because it sort of feels random. And AEW does, that's an overstatement of their weakness, but it's for the effect of, I think, what leads fans to not be as engaged with the product as what WWE does when they're fully engaged. It's like, it's so clear what Sami Zayn's journey was last year leading up to the match with Roman and Montreal. It's so clear what Cody's journey is. It's so clear that there's this dynamic with the bloodline, even the Judgment Day and Damage Control. They're like these factions and they have history and interpersonal dynamics, and you know what drives them and you know why you like them or don't like them. And AEW does, I think, because of Tony's roots as a fan, he thinks what fans need is more stashes of chips that Hook's going to snack on later, as opposed to there's plenty of that. It's other things that the fans are looking for. We've got plenty of great work, great matches. Give us the other layers that make pro wrestling great and do it better and more consistently. Doesn't mean copy WWE. They can still have their own identity, and maybe that isn't marketing to kids and women in the way that WWE has, but you hyper-focus on different strengths, because pro wrestling can take on a lot of different shapes and sizes, but one that actually does apply to drawing a big national cable audience that gets you the biggest TV deal possible outside of what WWE draws. And I just don't know if, you know, Jason Powell at Pro Wrestling Tonight, I think he was the one who asked on the conference call with Tony yesterday, you know, are you going to be Booker forever, or have you thought of rotating out? You know, Jerry Lawler and Tennessee took turns who was going to book, you know, they came back stronger and fresher. You know, great bookers almost always took time off or got fired by the boss, but Tony is the boss. He's 5 years in and he's got different people around him, you know, point to that, you know, fresh voices. And I think that can make a difference. And maybe that's enough, but maybe it's not. Jake, anything you want to add to that before we get to our next call?
Yeah, I probably would in other circumstances, but we're talking about SmackDown, and we've been on AEW for about 20 minutes now.
That's so true. We are.
I'll defer to the callers on the for what's up next.
Good point. All right, Chris from Warner Robins, Georgia, you are up. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
Hi, Wade, Jake. Big thing is, like, SmackDown with the layers, the bloodline and whatnot, we got a few questions. Like, especially you mentioning Roman being a mega baby face, because as soon as I heard the tears, I, like, tweeted Rich, and I was like, it's been coming. It's good. thing about it is the question is he at the point now where actually Roman can actually be a free agent now and go, like, flow between the shows?
Well, there's a draft next week, so I think we're going to find out, Jake, what the Paul Levesque draft era is going to be like, the post-draft. They haven't laid out the rules yet. They haven't laid out the structure. Kevin and Charlie were talking about that on Acknowledged WWE Daily Cast, and I think we're all waiting. You know, we're all wondering what is going to be the structure, and is there, you know, if you're not active at this very moment, you know, if Seth's out injured, if Ripley's out injured, if Roman isn't around, do they not draft them? And is there a rule for that? And is it applied consistently? I hope they just throw everybody in the draft and they just sort of, you know, work in that someone who's injured, you know, they each brand drafts an equal number of people who aren't around and available immediately to keep things balanced. But yes. So Jake, your thoughts on that? I kind of added the draft to Chris's framing of the question, but respond.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know if Roman is going to be around anytime soon, but I think with the new bloodline and the draft, I'm very curious to see if we get, for instance, like Paul Heyman and Roman drafted to one brand and the others remain, you know, on SmackDown for one reason, or Solo and Tama end up on Raw and they sort of develop this new bloodline faction away from Paul Heyman and Roman, and then they, you know, they're forced to into a conflict at some further point in time. But I think they have a lot of options. But Roman being a super baby face, I think was going to be inevitable. People wanted to cheer him even, you know, at the height of the, you know, of the bloodline's nastiness to Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and turning on Jay and everything else. You know, people still cheered and respected him. And I really look forward to seeing what he looks like as a baby face in 2024, because, you know, we don't have to look back very far, you know, 5 years roughly, to when he, you know, he was a baby face that people felt was forced on them, and he wasn't succeeding in the role because he was being confined to Vince McMahon's idea of what a successful baby face looks like and everything else. And so what does Roman's idea of a great baby face look like? And I think we're going to find out here in the next 6 months or so.
Yeah. Yep. Chris, back to you.
Thought was, is that, like, I know Triple H said that, like, if he wanted to establish the world title, that, like, you know, you put it on Seth Rollins and go. But I think a good move could be Roman. He may not be around all the time, but a good move could be world heavyweight title on Roman somehow to actually really give it that rub. If they want to keep two titles, they probably can do that. I don't think there's a coincidence that, like, he kind of switched up his music at WrestleMania because it has a new name. And also the team choir kind of helps with those things. So I really do think, like, you know, like we all say, mega babyface is coming. But also I really do think he's making a good case that night two of WrestleMania, he's going to be the guy, like, headlining again.
You think he will make that case? Is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
Or he'll try. I mean, Roman is – Jake, is Roman a bigger star than Cody Rhodes, or are they just different kind of stars? Because Cody's just there all the time, doing all the house shows, going on the European tour, doing all the autograph sessions. He's the good old school 90s style top WWF champion. And Roman is the more Hulk Hogan, when he wasn't working every house show and didn't work every TV show, late 80s, early 90s champion, where he's clearly the biggest star. But you were paying tickets at house shows oftentimes to see Randy Savage or, you know, whoever kind of the B guy was rising up or but not the biggest star, but still enough of an attraction to see. Is that what Cody's destined to be or likely to at least start off being with Roman still in the mix? Or or is it in this modern world, do you just frame it differently?
Well, I never would have expected Cody Rhodes to be where he is now, you know, 4 years ago. And right. So I have a really hard time betting against the guy because he's sort of proven that he can, you know, he can take this ball further than anybody expected him to run with it. And so I think he is a huge star legitimately. Like, you know, you see, you know, all the signings, all the charity work, all everything that he's doing, you know, he is about as good of a company guy as you could ask him to be at this stage in his career. But I don't think you could make a case that he's a bigger star than Roman Reigns. I think Roman Reigns is box office. He's got way more presence about him than Cody Rhodes does. That could change over the next couple of years. But if you were asking me, you know, to start a wrestling promotion and draft somebody number one, if I'm picking today, it's Roman Reigns. There's not a doubt about it.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris. Yep.
Oh, we have, let's see, from the list. By the way, the, what's it called? The MST thing is actually my favorite Tongan.
It's your favorite what?
If MST is my favorite Tongan, it's like from New Japan.
I never put that together. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is.
Yep.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I'm curious what they end up doing with Jacob Fatu when he shows up too. That'll be an interesting trio of guys there.
Follow that. But do you guys think the Winged Eagle is coming back? Does the tag titles look like older titles? I kind of think they're going to let Cody have that Winged Eagle he was talking about.
You think Cody's going to have a belt that looks like that? Is that what you said? Sorry.
Well, technically, like, since it's old school and Cody's been, like, hinting that he wants the Winged Eagle, he says up to Triple H, but we know kind of he's laying out hints. But I was reading that actually those tag titles have been in the works for a long time and actually had already been made. So the world titles on Raw look like the world titles, but those belts don't look like the title we got now. So put two and two together. Winged Eagle upcoming.
Yeah, what do you think, Jake, of the new belts, and what did they remind you of, or is it a blend and a hybrid of things? It seems like something Lebeck would have put thought into.
Yeah, I think, I mean, they weren't controversial in any way. They do look like old school, you know, I guess 90s, you know, WWF at the time belts. And so I could certainly see them bringing back, you know, a modernized version of the Winged Eagle if that's the direction they wanted to go. You know, it does seem like the world championship themed belts have a very sort of big gold belt kind of vibe to them. And so, yeah, I could definitely see them reviving that and applying the same theme across the different titles. I think the, you know, the tag titles and the current Intercontinental Championship and I guess if they do end up replacing the WWE title with something new, it could follow the same design language as what they were doing with, you know, with the world championships that they've introduced for Rollins and Ripley and the tag titles over on Raw. So that all follows suit, makes sense to me. I guess I don't know how much of a hurry they are to do it. They did just recently stop using the language of Universal Championship. So I'm curious where that goes, because now it's just the undisputed WWE title, whereas they used to make sure to insert Universal in there all the time prior to that. And I think it just started within the last month or two, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, less than that, I think, last few weeks, I think. To me, I'm just, if you have a WWE heavyweight champion, WWE women's champion, and then you have world heavyweight champion and a world women's champion, that's fine. Having the word undisputed still, it doesn't work because you have two world titles in your company. Of course there's a dispute. Like, it's just baked in. It's undisputed when you only have one world title. If you literally introduce a second world title, you don't get to call the other champ undisputed anymore. At least I would make that argument. So I would rather them keep Universal than undisputed, but strip away both and just go back to world and WWE as the two designations if you're going to have two belts. So anyway. Chris, anything else?
Actually, that's all my notes. Actually, I will say I love the new show, acknowledging WWE. Like, it filled my Nick and Tom, like, you know, void in my life. So, to keep going. Like, you know, but I'm missing Nick. If we can find him, get him on there more now, you can figure out a way to do that. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah, Nick's going to be... in the road, Tom, because he's in Europe. It was never timing-wise good to have him on the post show. But maybe we'll do something with him. But Nick is definitely going to be in rotation when he's not, you know, when he has free Friday nights, when he's not in the play that he's traveling and doing. And he was part of the WrestleMania roundtable, you know, a couple weekends back too. So you'll still be hearing from Nick one way or the other. Hopefully more often than in the past with me on these post shows and perhaps other formats. So. Kevin Duncan and Charlie Kate off to a really good start talking WWE. I love their enthusiasm, and I think they already win the award for the best sound quality of all our podcasts, although there's some good sounding ones, but they came out of the gate with good sound too. So that's nice. But we come for the personalities and the analysis and the enthusiasm, and they had that. Search PW Torch, everybody, if you want to subscribe to the Daily Cast, and you can check out the new WWE-themed weekly show. Chris, thanks. Good to hear from you.
You too, sir.
Yep. Jake, he didn't have a question, did he, before he complimented acknowledging WWE?
He probably did, but it also vacated my brain. So,
Chris, are you still there? I do this to Sean. Did you have a question or last topic for us that I just forgot about?
It was like a segue.
Gotcha. All right. Sounds good. Yep. There's a lot going on when we're live podcasting. We can't handle holding on to an idea and then talking about something else first. At least I can't a lot of the time. All right. Speaking of Sean, let's go to Sean in Murfreesboro. Sean, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Well, first, Wade, it feels like it's been a while. I appreciate always being on with you. And Jake, I feel like it's been a while. How are you, my good friend? Yeah.
Jake, I think he's talking to you.
I thought he was talking to you.
I'm doing well.
I'm talking to both of you, of course. I mean, I hope you're both doing well. Wade, I'm going to ask you right off the front. I'll get back to SmackDown, I promise. How do you feel about your Wolves? I think they're going to win the series, man. I do. I feel good about the T-Wolves. I know it's Durant and Booker. I get that. But Minnesota's feeling something. Towns is back. I like where they're going. What do you think real quick?
I established on the Fix that I have already resigned myself to them losing 4 straight blowouts. It was a great year. But the last game of the season, 3-way tie for the number one seed in the West that the Wolves held almost the whole season. And then the two teams tied with us played 2 teams with nothing to play for. I think they just played 3 players at a time. They never even put 5 on the court. They both lost by 40 points. So both of the teams we're competing with had just cakewalks to win. And then we get Phoenix, who crushed us all 3 games this season. I don't think we lost 2 games to more than 1 or 2 teams, and we lost 3 games to them all year. They just are a matchup nightmare for us. So my only hope is that the Wolves, it's a wake-up call and some of the mistakes they're making, that this meant with a whole week to prepare, unlike the number 1 and 2 seeds that don't know who they're playing, until a couple days beforehand because of the play-in. We have a whole week to figure out what we're doing wrong. If they lean on the fact that, for 3 quarters we played even with them, and it was only mistakes in the first quarter that mattered, when teams have 20-point leads, they don't play with the same intensity for the next 3 quarters. So I hope they realize that, shooting basket for 3 quarters when you're down by an average of 18 points is not a consolation prize. So I love the Wolves. I thought they could win the NBA title, but I've been thinking for a couple months, as long as they avoid Phoenix. And Phoenix is really playing well, better than us the last, 40% of the season, us being the Wolves. So I am nervous. So I am pre-mourning the end of their dream season and sad and hoping Phoenix ages out by next year and then we can win a title. So everything now is a bonus. It's just me cope. It's my coping mechanism. Of course, I'm hoping for otherwise. And Sean, I hope you are right. There's so much talent on the team. And I mean, they're just good in every way. I mean, it's top championship level defense, incredible offense, just unicorns with Towns and Ant, and really cool support and a veteran point guard. I love the team, and they're fun to cheer for. So I'm hoping for the best. All right. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, so I'll say with the Wolves, all they got to do, the playoffs are different, number one. Number two, get physical with KD. We saw that last year. If they get physical with them, I think it's going to be a good series for them. I really do. That's all I'll say. About SmackDown, going back to James, I appreciate James and what he brought up. And I just want to go, I think I told you, but I want to reiterate just the stuff that WWE is doing well and why people are wanting to watch WWE right now. I know we talk about it, this is a sports-like feel, like the shots outside the arena, showing the fans in the upper part of the arena, showing the merchandise stands, showing the enthusiasm of the product and showing the different camera angles and showing stuff that Vince just wasn't going to do and Kevin Dunn wasn't going to do. These guys are going to do it, and Triple H is going to do it, and he's going to make it feel like a lively, fun product to be a part of. The Sami Zayn, just him walking in was just fantastic stuff, and we've been wanting that for years, and we're getting it, and we're excited about it. And I will say, the the work rate in WWE, people get on WWE for their work rate. I think it's very good. Is it AEW? Is there a Will Ospreay? No, there's not. But there doesn't have to be a Will Ospreay. They do good enough in the ring to where I'm excited to watch the product with the wrestling and with the stories. Because like you said, it's about the storytelling. That's what gets me invested in characters. I could see a great match all day long, you know, and that's fine, but that's not what it's about for me. And so I wanted to talk about the Bayley-Naomi match, kind of get some different aspects of the match. First, I love going back to the arena stuff. I love the Naomi challenger and the side, you know, the side to side, the, you know, but Naomi challenger and then Bayley the champion. I love that when they've come and introduced the people now. I really enjoy that. The match, like, I think Naomi's done a better job so far. Like, I mean, I've never loved her in-ring work. It's always been okay to me, and that's what I thought the match was just kind of okay. I thought she got too much offense in, honestly. I didn't think Bayley showed enough of what she can do. I think Bayley needs to show more of that here if she's going to have the title for a little while, because she was feeling a little cold, and now she's starting to get a little hotter, and I want to see the in-ring work that she does because she's fantastic in the ring. And then for me at the end, again, if you're going to have Tiffany interfere in the match, which, again, WWE, that's the one thing I don't like. They're doing this again. Mm. They're interfering in a lot of matches. Yeah. I hate that. And Tiffany could have attacked them after the daggum match. Have Bayley win the match, and then have Tiffany come in and attack them. That's all you got to do. Easy for me. What do you guys think about the match afterwards and Naomi's a worker and all that kind of stuff going in?
Yeah, we're not here to give free passes to anybody, Jake. And Paul Levesque's booking lately, one I think valid and concerning criticism, is the disregard of the importance of when you advertise a big main event, title on the line or not, deliver a finish. And, you know, be a brave booker. Naomi can absorb a loss. You can explain if you want to do a triple threat with Naomi and Bayley and Tiffany, or you want to do a four-way and add Io Sky to it or something like that. There's other ways to establish that and tell the story. Make sure you're telling stories to justify pay-per-view matches that involve main events, main TV main events that you build up that have finishes. And so I don't fret or have a problem with them doing it now and then. I think it's legit, and I'm fine as a booking technique to do a non-finish or, you know, heel interrupting a babyface versus babyface match, especially, and making it an all contest, but not if it's, not if three out of the last 4 weeks or 5 weeks you did the same thing with other matches. You can individually justify them as a booker, but you need to take into account, are we doing it often enough that it's going to chip away at fans' investment in TV matches? And I do think they're at that point, and I think that might be the number one concern or complaint right now about Levesque's approach to booking TV compared to I do believe the percentage is significantly higher than it had been before recently. So it seems like something he's gone to more often lately. Even when he was booking before, I don't think it was happening as much. So that's a concern. I mean, it was an 11-minute match with a commercial break in the middle, so I don't think there was a ton of time to tell, do a ton of stories, but I think they wanted to make Naomi look strong. Jake, what do you think of the match, and what do you think of what Sean and I are talking about regarding the lack of conclusive finishes so often on TV lately?
Yeah, I think it is a bother. You certainly don't want it to become a crutch. And I think it's very easy to have that happen, you know, if you're booking for convenience. And I think, you know, when you're putting this much television together on a weekly basis, it's probably easy to develop some bad habits. And so, you know, maybe put one of those counters in the backstage, you know, 0 days since the last
right.
finish,
yeah,
at the end of an episode of television. But you know, it's certainly something you don't want them to develop a pattern with, and hopefully they don't. I guess time will tell, but I'll certainly be critical of it if it continues. But the match itself, I think it's, you know, it was probably the pace that Naomi is comfortable working at this point. You know, it doesn't seem like she, you know, we saw that with Tiffany the week before, where, you know, when Tiffany tries to push a pace that is beyond Naomi's skill, she tends to get a little bit sloppy. And so I think this was a, you know, two veterans just knowing where the sweet spot was and doing their best with the limited time.
that they had. You know, I think we only got, like you said, 7 or 8 minutes of actual televised wrestling here. So it was fine for what it was. But, you could see the finish coming from Orbit last week when they had the whole segment with Tiffany and Naomi. So I wasn't too shocked by it, but you can kind of start to see the patterns in the way that that Paul Levesque books. And I think EO kind of watching the match from the crowd, it could very easily be a triple threat or a fatal four-way by the time we get to Backlash in France.
Yeah. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, and that's what I'm curious when the draft happens because, I mean, I'm definitely excited, and I was going to say, too, I'm very excited to see – I mean, I'm nervous, of course, because Vince did the draft and he was awful at it. But I'm curious, you know, with the draft, how he does the draft. You know, hopefully it's a more sports-like thing like we've been wanting – and not Fox people acting like goofs in a back room, which, oh, God, don't even get me – I hope they don't do that again. Please don't do that again. Because Bayley needs fresh challengers, and I hope they get some – the people switched that need to be switched in some good areas to have some fresh matchups, which we really need right now, which I think will help. Because I think Bayley needs to get away from damage control, at least, you know, not right away. I mean, they'll go to it here for a little bit, but after that I think they need to kind of get away from it and move on to something different. But the last question I was going to bring you guys was – I've actually was on talking online with some people about this, and I wanted to hear your thoughts because I'm okay with this right now. We were talking about, you know, Triple H came on, you know, Monday with the tag team stuff, and then, you know, this week with the tag team stuff. And people were talking about, well, Triple H might be on doing too much, like, oh, here's me, you know, look at me, look what I'm doing. You know, some of the things we've said about him in the past, and rightfully so. For me, I'm okay if he's – on TV until after the, you know, till the draft, and obviously he's going to be there for the draft, and we get all that, and he should be. But after that, I really think he's going to stay away for a little bit. I don't think he's going to be on TV as much. I think he's going to, like, let the wrestlers and let the people do their thing and do what they're great at and let them tell their stories and let them – and I don't think it's going to be an issue, but some people are a little nervous, and I understand that. I mean, again, Triple H has had that aura about him where, you know, here, look at me, look what I'm doing. But I think he's gotten better about that, and I think once the draft is over, I think we won't see much of that. So I want to hear what you guys thought about that.
Well, if you don't want Triple H on TV every week, just start chanting, "We want wrestling," instead of Triple H when he comes out. And that'll solve itself real quick because he doesn't want to be out there. And I thought, actually, tonight it wasn't an overwhelming chant for him. Like, after the music stopped, he's like, oh, this is when they're going to chant Triple H. And he waited, and like 1,000 people chanted it, but it didn't turn into 5 or 10. And he's like, oh, I'm going to talk then because this isn't going well. That was my read on the situation. Maybe uncharitable because, you know, it's not always clear on TV what's happening, but it wasn't overwhelming. So if there's diminishing returns, he's going to get the signal. You know, I mean, people love Paul Levesque, but they don't want Paul Levesque on TV every week, like they didn't want The Authority on TV every week. And frankly, Vince McMahon was on TV way too much for such a long stretch of time. So I think at this stage of his life, and I mean, he's just grown so much in so many different ways. I think he'll see that. I think we're going to get him next week for the draft. But I'm kind of hoping the week after that, it's back to Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis doing their thing. Jake, are you concerned at all? Or, you know, Triple H is a big star. You really want to emphasize it's a new era. It's not like he isn't interacting with the wrestlers and just, you know, doing monologues. I mean, you can make an argument he's kind of thinking some of this stuff through and making sure what he's doing is newsworthy and putting over other wrestlers. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I could live without the multiple weekly references to the Triple H era, but hopefully that dies off once they get through the draft and they're able to focus on new feuds and fresh things that are happening on the show. I also don't expect them to be appearing every week once they get into the swing of things. I think he's a bit, he's pretty in tune to what the audience is doing and saying and talking about, and it's pretty clear that they're briefed on social media and everything else that's happening there. So they understand what conversations are happening out there, and I don't think it's going to be one of those things where he just insists on being on TV all the time. He didn't particularly have a whole lot to say on this show. You know, it's one of those things where he's just introducing a title and he got out of there as quickly as he could. So I'm hopeful that he's self-aware enough to realize that we don't need multiple weekly references to him announcing that we're in a new era. It was okay at WrestleMania, and you can kind of tolerate it in these kind of post-Mania episodes. But they got to move on to the actual talent, because that's what's selling people on coming to the shows and buying those tickets.
Yep. Well put. Jake, how about as far as the draft? Sean brought that up. What do you hope for most from the draft this year? Either something WWE did before but inconsistently, or they've never done before, to make it seem like a new era for the draft and a better era?
Well, I think the biggest changes are going to come from a presentation standpoint. It's been pretty rough. You know, they've taken a lot of shortcuts in drafting teams together and factions together and stuff like that. I think they can learn a lot from how other sports handle their drafts, how they're presented, how those conversations play out, getting live reactions. And I'm sure Lee Fitting will have a lot of ideas about how to shoot it and some different camera angles and we're a long way from everybody sitting in watching a television backstage and reacting to their draft pick or whatever the case may be. I think they have a much more competent production team now than they did then. But as far as the actual draft picks are concerned, they're in pretty dire need of a shakeup. You know, they need fresh matchups for their champions on both shows, and so I expect them to be moving pretty much. All of the major players will end up with some fresh matchups here, and I think it's sorely needed. It's been a while since they were building to WrestleMania for a while, and they had those feuds in place, and they've played out. But heading into this summer season, they're going to need some fresh stuff, and they have some good opportunities here to move people. And I wouldn't even mind them splitting up some factions along the way. I think some of the Raw factions that are past their prime. Alpha Academy seems to be on their way out the door. I think Judgment Day could use a shakeup. It's clear the Bloodline is going through some sort of transformation. And so I expect some shocking picks that will hopefully get people excited about a new opportunity for a few people.
Sean, back to you. Do you have a top wish for the draft?
No, I mean, I've been thinking, I mean, nothing comes offhand. I mean, like I said, I'm just with Jake. I just want the fresh matchups. I just think, some of the matchups are getting a little stale. I am excited for the Cody AJ match. I do think, even though we know what's going to happen, I mean, of course, but I think the two will do a good story. I think the contract signing will be fun next week. And AJ is just a great worker. He always has been. They'll put on a good match, and it'll be a lot of fun. But after that, I think they need to shake some things up. So nothing like that hits me right off the top of my head right now, but I'm just excited to see what they do. There's a lot of good stuff coming up. I wanted to say, Nick Brabatti, I'm excited when he does get back on the airwaves. But, he's so much fun. I mean, I'll just be glad to have him back, whatever capacity. Wade, you're one of the best out there, man. Go VIP, everyone. Like I said, I've been for a long time. It's the best you can ever do. The audio is just phenomenal. The insight is just great. And become a .NET member, too. Jake and Jason are fantastic. They do a great job. And it's just fun to be on here with you guys, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Great. Always good hearing from you, Sean. Thanks for the kind words. By the way, people talk about VIP. We have unlocked. We did this in the lead-up to WrestleMania. Maybe the week after. No, whatever. We did it earlier this month. We unlocked the 7-day free trial on our Patreon option if you want to sign up through Patreon, which means it's compatible with Spotify. So if you're a Spotify user, that's nice, too, because Patreon is a partnership with Spotify. Go to patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. And you can get 7 days free. So you can just indulge and binge our VIP shows and also hear our free shows like this one, streamlined with the ads and plugs removed. It just goes right from bumper music to bumper music without the commercials and in-house stuff. So check it out and then let it roll over into a paid membership if you like what you hear. And again, it syncs up. There's an RSS feed, so you can use any popular podcast app you're already using. You can use the Patreon app or you can use Spotify. That's patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. All right, let's go to some email thoughts here and begin with Ryan in Peg City, who has a topic we haven't brought up yet. I'm wondering if you have any backstage insight into why Carlito was brought back to WWE. He looked good in his first appearance, but since has been so underwhelmed, I've been underwhelmed by his character in the ring work since. It's like he has his one or two spots, but everything else is a labor for him to do. He looks lethargic in the ring, moving around like a guy that's 7 feet tall and 450 pounds. But he's like 6'1" and 225 pounds. What's the deal with Carlito? Because he's not very cool right now. Thanks, and have a great weekend. Jake, Carlito's never much of a worker. He was there because he had a distinct look and personality that they tried to market. But, you know, there was a time where it was like, hey, this could be a big star. And he just didn't have the work rate. I mean, like, we don't use that term as much anymore because there's such good work rate in wrestling as a standard. But Carlito does stand out now. And you can tell he's around, but they're not super invested in some sort of, you know, whole new exciting phase of his career. And, I mean, I don't – Ryan's not wrong. I don't think anybody's, like, who wasn't exposed to Carlito a long time ago is going, why did this guy have a full-time career all these years? Look at how good he is. I don't think he's impressing people. But as a side character to the storyline, I mean, I think it's fine. I am curious where they go with you know, I mean, we're assuming he's the one behind the Dragon Lee attack. But is he going to show fire and enough athleticism for it to actually pay off and be worth it? Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I think those are good questions. Carlito has for my money has never been really successful as a babyface, and so I'm hopeful that if heel turn is the direction they're going, and at least that appears to be the direction they're going, that he'll be able to find a bit more to mine out of his personality, and I think working heel in the ring will be a bit easier on him, and he'll be able to hide his limitations a bit more in that sense. But yeah, I haven't been wowed by Carlito either. I don't have any backstage insight about, you know, why in particular he was brought in. It may have been, just to fill out the LWO and to try to make something out of that story with Escobar. But I think they should at least try to give him an opportunity to see if he can make it work as a heel. And if not, I guess I don't know how long his current deal is, but I guess they can, they can always let that deal expire when that comes if they feel like they need to. But even as a heel, it's like, okay, what are the hot feuds for Carlito? Like, what is the ceiling on this? And I just don't have a great answer until we see a bit more of the character work, which I think is what he would need to really excel at in order to make an impact with whatever show he lands on.
All right. Next, we'll go to Zach in Texas. Is this Bloodline Civil War story giving everyone else vibes of NWO Wolfpack versus NWO Hollywood? Both stories involve a faction splitting in half rather than as a means of extending the story. In both cases, there's no natural babyface side. The difference is that Kevin Nash was effortlessly cool. Randy Savage is beloved, and the crowd is willing to cheer the Wolfpack even if it made no sense. That's not really the case with the Bloodline. The biggest problem, though, is that Rock and Roman are absent. There's nobody really calling the shots except Solo, and he's basically the equivalent of Conan calling the shots instead of Nash. Should the Bloodline just dissolve and everyone go their separate ways? Zach in Texas. So I disagree with, like, almost everything Zach said, but I think there's, in a general sense, fair concern that you're trying to, split something to keep it going as a means to create new interest and create a new chapter. If Solo wasn't so good, so young, and it wasn't so good in this role so far and so young and hadn't laid the foundation for this to be a leader in waiting, and if Heyman weren't better than anybody in the NWO at talking in a way that, forward storylines and adjust the situation. And by the way, if Roman Reigns wasn't as cool as Kevin Nash and Scott Hall ever were, not saying he's more, it's different, but he's not in a different category. He's going to be a super cool babyface. And I think the fans love Reigns and the Usos. And I think they're going to be into booing The Rock and Solo and Tama Tonga. So I just think, again, that's why I say I disagree with Zach's description here. I think in a generic sense, it's a fair concern to have, but specifically speaking, I like what I see so far, especially tonight. Jake.
Yeah, I mean, I think the comparison kind of falls apart the more you think about it. Because I have way more confidence in the performers that are going to be a part of this than I would have in, the
the NWO and Wolfpack guys to be able to put on, quality matches. And you're not going to have nearly the amount of, political turmoil in who's putting over who and whatever the case may have been in the WCW locker room in the 90s. And I have way more confidence in the writing than I do for anybody who is working creatively in that company at that time period. And so I think there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic about the direction of this story. And I think the quality of the, the drama, and in particular, the ability to pull on some of those family stories that are going to link all these guys together is, it provides, some things that everybody can relate to. And I just don't think any of that stuff existed when you were talking about the NWO versus the Wolfpack, And so I think there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic. And I don't think the stories are going to end up being that similar, even if it is, a story about a faction splitting and having rivals, inside the same family. So we'll see where it goes. But I don't think it's going to end up being as lackluster as what we saw with WCW in 98 or whatever that feud was.
Yeah, this is just it's a red hot company with smarter people at the helm in terms of big picture with Paul Levesque, I think a really high quality writing team. And then you look at the people involved in this, especially Paul Heyman. I just think they're going to steer this well and adjust if they need to. I'm feeling good about this new phase of the Bloodline. It feels like a reboot or a new fresh season with some new people being added and in a new dynamic. So you don't want it to be Dexter where you're just like, oh God, I wish they just wrapped the series up after 4 years, after four or five seasons, whatever it was, when it took a downturn into awful. This feels like it's being rejuvenated, but we'll see. It's early and. We'll see how long they stretch it out without Rock and Roman, and if that does affect things, and how, like I said, how Tama Tonga does, and does he show the necessary range when more is asked of him as time goes on? Javier, by the way, just a message. He goes, the pop is going to be huge when Roman Reigns return. Roman Reigns is already a babyface, and if we look at the point he turned, it could have been. I was going to say, the Hall of Fame speech was sort of a babyface turn because it was just Roman being just this cool dude who, appreciates things and whatever. It was all there in the intro speech. But the body language of Rock kind of dissing him and Roman kind of like, really? And Rock sort of bigfooting him a little bit and not really paying respect to him, whether that had a mix of real life mixed in to give it some authenticity or not or whatever. I think fans started going, we like Rock because he's a movie star and we'll chant for him and pop for him. But storyline-wise, he's a dick. And we like our guy, Roman. He's been around. Even though Roman isn't a full-time guy and he could be getting go-away heat because he's not around full-time, but there's something about him in contrast to The Rock, even in the midst of a feud with Cody where fans started to warm to him. And it just feels like things have flipped probably quicker than they expected. I think Paul Heyman might have been a little surprised that people were chanting, we want Roman. I don't know that they gauged for that this early in the pace of the story they're telling. Jake.
Yeah, I don't, he looked a little caught off guard by it. He got even a little choked up when he was trying to talk.
Yeah.
I think it bodes well for the future of the story, but they have to lay the groundwork right now for this thing to be hot. And I think it's going to probably end up involving Jacob Fatu at some point, and you're going to end up with a 3-on-3. And I think they should try to plant the seeds of this going deeper than, just Solo's division, when they first introduced Solo, I believe it was the tribal elders who placed him in the faction. So is there other yeah. family drama that's at play here? Is The Rock making a power play and getting in Solo here?
Haku is front row at the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Right. So there's plenty of potential that you can tease here about what's driving this division. And we'll see how much they play on all that. They may choose to keep it close to the vest until they have a better idea of availability of The Rock and things like that. So we'll see where it goes. But I really do believe that Roman is going to be a gigantic babyface. And if they play their cards right, they can turn, this young, hungry heel faction that they're building with this new bloodline into something special if they want to.
They did a ceremony with the tag titles. We talked about the tag belts. But what do you think about Austin Theory and Grayson Waller as champs? What do you think initially? And what do you think now with the story they're telling? The Street Profits win the four-way. The Street Profits, I wrote this in my report at pwtorch.com. They're basically back where they were before they tried to give them a reboot and have them get more of an edge, you know, have Dawkins dress better, link them up with Lashley, turn him heel. The fans cheered him anyway, and they're like, ah, screw it. We're just going to be baby faces. It's a little bit awkward, but, you know, it sort of feels like that's their role that the fans want them in, and they're just leaning back into it. But are Waller and Theory okay to have because of what we saw tonight from them, which is foils for Aldis and Levesque? They can be obnoxious on color commentary, and they, you know, had that good video last week, and now they're out here, you know, just acting in a way that I think the justification for giving them the belts is they're entertaining, bombastic personalities who fans are going to want to watch get beat up. They'll be angry if they find a way to sneak out with the titles, and they'll be happy if they lose. That's the case to be made for them. How do you feel at this point in their title reign with what they did tonight, Jake?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we, you know, if they end up aligning with Logan Paul at some point. I don't know if he's going to end up coming back sooner or later. But it does feel like they're being used in the same capacity. They're obnoxious. They're disrespectful. They're over the top, and they can work their way under people's skin on the microphone. And I think Waller is probably a little bit more consistent about that than Theory is in terms of the quality of the mic work. But you know, it seems like they're in the right position. They're growing as a team. They have more babyface teams than heel teams on SmackDown right now, and so they're in a position to have some feuds that last all the way till SummerSlam, and I guess they can make a decision there about what direction they go, or maybe we'll see them get even more potential opponents in this draft. You know, there's a lot of things that are unsettled at this point, but I think their performances have more than justified the choice to put the titles on them, and I like the fact that they disrespected Triple H. And it got Nick Aldis angry, and now he's going to be looking for teams to try and unseat them, and then they can continue to try to, outthink him and find clever ways to retain. So it seems like the right kind of title reign is in place for a group of pest heels like those two.
I think the issue is just having a joke of a team that aren't super credible in Theory and Waller and the way they carried themselves and were portrayed, and then a joke of a team with Miz and Truth on the babyface side. It's like, wait, is the tag division just the comedy division? And so that's the part. I think just the initial reaction was more than doubled. It was more amplified because the belts went to two of the less credible teams that felt more comedy-like. But, I mean, I'm a fan of Waller and Theory's chemistry, and I think they add something to the show that is part of the WWE formula that works. I just wish and hope that they keep the belts for a while, that they incorporate into their push and their presentation some semblance of competence and credibility so that they aren't just goofs. Because I think you can tell stories with goofs without spending the tag belts on them or a championship belt on them. AJ Styles beat LA Knight. I mentioned that at the top of the show. We haven't spent much time on it. AJ with new music. LA Knight still getting a lot of cheers. The match went about 11 minutes. Not much time to be epic. But we got another dose of these two. Tell me what you think of AJ being Cody's first opponent. And what do you think about what losing relatively clean to LA Knight, or to AJ Styles, says about how they think about LA Knight? I mean, a thumb to the eye. It's hardly, protecting him a ton. But I'm not being critical of it. It's more just what message does it send? Because, I mean, it is in the category of brave booking. But it also says, he's a tier two babyface. That's my take on it, which is fine. But it's still a credible win. And I thought, he looked good enough against AJ. So I'm curious for your take on all that, Jake.
Yeah, I think he's in a good position to be drafted and to get some fresh opponents over on the Raw side of things. I don't know. He's certainly never going to overtake Cody Rhodes over on SmackDown at this point. And so I think it's safe to say, yeah, he's he's definitely in that tier two babyface category. He got an important win at WrestleMania. He got, I guess you could say, he got cheated out of a victory on SmackDown tonight, and they're probably going to move him over to, you know, maybe he'd be a good candidate to be floating around that Intercontinental Championship over on Raw if that title remains with that show. But I've often thought, you know, he'd be a great opponent for Logan Paul as well, and we can see, you know, if he sticks it around on SmackDown, if that's where he ends up landing. But the match itself, well, I mean, they work pretty well together. I think he and AJ have found a decent chemistry, more so than he had with Roman or some of his other opponents. And so I'm not down on LA Knight, but I think there needs to be some new wrinkles to his act if he wants to find his way back into that main event picture.
Yeah. How would you handle Cody and AJ in the short time that they have to promote them to make it not, because one of the big concerns with Cody's reign is you don't want it to be a letdown. You know, when it happened with Sting back in 1990 after being Flair. So is this good because it is a short turnaround? Cody gets a good win, boom, you flip to something else. Or is there a chance they're going to try to get even more out of Styles than a one-off with Cody?
I think you give Styles Cody a significantly strong victory here. I think he needs to look strong as the champion. I guess I don't really see AJ Styles in this current iteration being somebody that they'd put a world title on. But I guess if they go with some softer finish where where Cody doesn't get an overwhelming victory, then I guess they could go back to it for another pay-per-view. But I don't really feel the need. I think once the draft is over and they get, you know, the people they want over on SmackDown for Cody to feud with, they should just move right into that stuff. There's, Styles is a very talented guy, but this character that he's playing right now feels pretty ill-defined, and so I don't see any need to have him hang around the main event for 2 or 3 months.
Jake, anything else from SmackDown you want to bring up?
We talked about the Street Profits a little bit in that long tag match. I think it would have been better as like a tornado tag because it seemed like they ignored the rules for the vast majority of the match anyway.
Yeah, it kind of was a tornado, yeah.
But, I'm interested to see what tag teams end up on which show and how that stacks up for the future of those divisions, because now that they have a title for each brand, I'm hoping the tag team wrestling sees a bit of a revival in WWE. It had really become a second class citizen because of the traveling champions and how little opportunity there was for tag teams to really make a breakthrough. So we'll see what shakes out there. But I thought the match was okay. I don't know if I would have had it go 17 minutes, though, ideally. You know, they could have shortened that up, and I would have been fine with it.
How are you feeling about Corey Grayson and Wade Barrett as a team?
I think the chemistry is okay. I don't know if having, two commentators with heel tendencies is necessarily the best choice long term. I guess if they can change Corey Graves' character up a little bit, maybe that would work, or if they wanted to modify what Wade is doing. But it seems like the wheelhouse of both guys is kind of leaning into the heel sympathy, and I guess as a package, sometimes it feels like you don't have that that genuine outrage when a babyface gets screwed over like you would on a show that had a more straightforward, like an Ian Riccaboni or somebody who does that stuff really well.
Yeah, yeah. All right, very good. I think that's all I got too, Jake. So I'm good signing off here if you are.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks for having
me.
Good. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Hope people enjoyed the dose of comparisons of AEW and WWE a bit throughout the show too. But looking forward to the draft next week. So join us for our live draft coverage after SmackDown next week. And, of course, we'll be by with Raw and Dynamite coverage here on the post show between then and now, and join Greg Parks on Wrestling Night in America on the PW Torch Daily Cast after Dynasty on Sunday night. Brandon LeClaire joining him. I'll have a link in my report Sunday night at pwtorch.com with a live stream for Greg and Brandon's post show, which you're invited to call in to and discuss the pay-per-view with them. Jake, before we sign off here completely, tell people about your coverage of things over at ProWrestling.net.
Yeah, you can check out my coverage of SmackDown on a weekly basis on Fridays over on the ProWrestling.net main page. I also do an audio review of SmackDown that gets posted for members after the show. I join Jason every Friday for the .net weekly show, where we go over news and events and anything else that's going on that week. Like this week, we previewed the AEW Dynasty show that's coming up on Sunday. And then I also join Jason for WWE and AEW pay-per-view audio reviews after those shows. So all that stuff's available over at ProWrestling.net. You can check out membership options for the audio reviews and things like that at PWMembership.net.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jake. Thanks to our callers, our emailers, and, of course, our listeners. And, follow us on Instagram at PWTorch, by the way. I'm going to be putting some kind of cool stuff up, some old vintage photos and current stuff on Instagram more often these days, I think. So follow us there if you haven't yet and you're on IG. And we'll talk to y'all next time. Thanks.